and I'll make you write it tomorrow.
Rabbi, I'd like to remind you of the schedule on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at this time, quarter to 12, Rabbi Breidel, which is homage to the first group. Second year has a little sir. Okay? And I think there's going to be a go. If anybody has any questions, you ask me.
Rabbi Yaffe's announcement was a little premature because this is the last shiur I'll be giving for till the end of the month, basically. I'm going to have to go to Chutz Laretz.
Oh, yeah? You're going to Baltimore?
Among other places, yeah. So I'm going... Yeah.
What's this?
Till May 31st.
Start again June 1st?
Not June 1st. It would be June 2nd.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll work on that. Okay.
Yeah. So recovering every parsha between
the what day?
Recovering all the parshas.
Right. Yeah. But I'm going to miss a parsha, just as anyone who came from Chutz Laretz, you know, as you know, whenever the eighth day of Pesach is Shabbos, so in Chutz Laretz we're one parsha behind, because the eighth day of Pesach is not Pesach in Israel, so we read Parshas Acharimos, and this week we read Parshas Kedoshim, but in America they read Acharimos this week, and they're reading Kedoshim next week. So as a result, they're going through all sorts of catch-up issues, and we don't catch up until the middle of the summer. It's a good question why we couldn't catch up earlier by just joining to Parshios. So it's an interesting question. If you're going back and forth and you miss a Torah reading, exactly what are you supposed to do? So what they did this last Shabbos is they did have a Torah reading where they read two Parshios, Acharimos and Kedoshim. But the emissaries of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach actually paskens that you don't have to be concerned about ketchup, because he actually says there's no particular chiyuv to hear the particular Parsha of the week. In other words, you're mechuyev to read the Torah on Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos. But it doesn't have to be. If it's not the parsha, even if they read another parsha, you would actually be yotze your mitzvah as an individual. The congregation reads the parsha to finish the Torah in the whole year, but you don't have to be concerned if you miss the Torah reading, as long as you didn't miss the Shabbos, as long as every Shabbos you were in shul and you heard the Torah read in a way that was proper for that shul, you don't have to make a cheshbon. Did I hear the right parsha or not? That's what Shlomo Zalman Auerbach actually says. Yeah.
But Shtayim Mikra, what will you do?
Well, Shtayim Mikra, I would follow the pattern of where I live. So I would keep the Eretz Yisrael. In other words, like anything else, your Shtayim Mikra is based on where you live. So if you live in Eretz Yisrael, you happen to be in Chutz Laretz, you will still do the Eretz Yisrael Shtayim Mikra in that way. Okay. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit, though, about the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, which is both the mitzvah that we're doing now, and it's also the mitzvah coming up in next week's Parsha in Eretz Yisrael, although I'm not going to hear it next week. And that is, we know that there's a mitzvah in the Torah, number one, to bring a korban that is called the korban of the Omer. Now, what is Omer? Omer just means a measure of barley. Actually, it doesn't mean barley, a measure. And it happened to be on the second day of Pesach. The Torah commands that a measure of barley was brought as a korban mincha in the Beis HaMikdash, and part of it was sacrificed on the Mizbeach, and the rest of it was kneaded into matzah, because it's Pesach, that was eaten by the Kohanim, and this is called the Korban Omer. Now the Korban Omer has a very, very important role in the life of a Jewish person, because the Torah says there is a prohibition to eat the grain of the new year, the newly harvested grain, which is around Pesach time, that's called Chadash, until the Korban Omer was brought. Meaning, until we bring the Korban HaOmer on the second day of Pesach, we can only eat last year's grain. We are not allowed to eat the grain that was grown in this present year.
Last year's in before Nisan?
Yeah, so the way it works is, it's a little bit of a complicated cheshbon. Any grain that was planted before the second day of Pesach, even if you don't harvest it till much later, is considered to be permitted with the Omer. So the only problem of Chadash would be the grain that you planted after the second day of Pesach. That grain is not going to be permitted when you harvest it later in the summer, until next Nisan. In other words, it's a complicated rule because all Chadash eventually becomes Yashan. Right? Chadash means that which was planted after the second day of Pesach cannot be eaten until, I'll talk about how it applies today, cannot be eaten until the Korban HaOmer. Once the Korban HaOmer is brought, you could eat that grain, but you couldn't eat any new grain that was planted after the second day of Pesach, right? This is the concept of Chadash. So the Omer was a very important korban. Ad kidei kach, that the Talmud Yerushalmi says that the first Pesach that the Jews were in Eretz Yisrael, and they had no grain from a prior year, right? And all they had was the new grain. They were not allowed to eat any new grain until the second day of Pesach. What that meant was the very first Seder they had in Eretz Yisrael, where they brought the Korban Pesach, they did not eat matzah that night. They were not able to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah because the grain that they found in Eretz Yisrael was chadash, and it would not be mutar until the second day of Pesach. Now, the Talmud Yerushalmi does ask an interesting kasha, and that is, we have a general rule that if the only way you could do a positive mitzvah is by transgressing a negative mitzvah, the positive mitzvah overrides the negative mitzvah. That is called Aseh Docha Lo Sasa. A positive mitzvah overrides a negative. One example of that would be we do a bris on Shabbos if it's the eighth day. Even though doing a bris is causing bleeding, and that's a malacha to cause bleeding, but if the only way I could do the mitzvah of circumcision is by desecrating Shabbos, the positive overrides the negative. Now that's only true if the baby's eighth day is on Shabbos. The baby is born on Shabbos and the eighth day is on Shabbos. If you're doing a bris late, you're doing a bris the ninth day, or the tenth day, or the 30th day, you cannot do that bris on Shabbos. And the reason is because a bris on the ninth day is the same as a bris on the 10th day. There's no special mitzvah, so I could do the mitzvah without desecrating Shabbos. So I wait. Masha'in came, when it's the 8th day, there's a special mitzvah to do a bris on the 8th day, so that's going to override. This is a very famous klal in Shas, and this klal is called Aseh Docha Lo Sasa. A positive commandment overrides, pushes aside a negative commandment. Now, why that is so, the Ramban in Parshas Yisro offers a very interesting explanation. The Ramban says that positive commandments express love of Hashem. Right? When I love someone, I want to do good things for them. Negative commandments, when I don't touch something, right? Like parents used to say, you know, don't touch the air conditioning or whatever it is. I know some shuls actually put a sign, almost, you almost feel like they're going to kill you because no one dares touch the air conditioning or the heating. So that represents yira, fear and awe. And although a person has to have both fear of Hashem, which is really awe and reverence, and love of Hashem, because love is a higher madrega than fear, the positive commandment that represents love overrides the negative commandment that represents fear. That is what the Ramban says in Parshas Yisro. So based on this, the Talmud Yerushalmi asks a very interesting kasha. Why do we say that the first year of Pesach, Bnei Yisrael were not able to eat matzah because all of that grain was chadash, because they had not brought an omer yet, and chadash is not permitted until the second day of Pesach, even if it's prohibited? But if that's the only way they could do the mitzvah of matzah, there was no other grain. That's the only way they could do it. And they didn't do it because of that. Should I not say the rule, Asay Doche Lo Sasa? This is the Yerushalmi's question. And the Yerushalmi gives a very interesting answer. The Yerushalmi actually says that this was a rabbinic decree. In other words, a rabbinic decree that's so early from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. And that is, Asay Doche Lo Sasa would let me eat one kazayas, because that's a mitzvah. But if I were to eat extra matzah more than the mitzvah, I would only have the sin without the mitzvah. So the Chachamim prohibited even eating the first kazayas, lest in the course of matzah, because, you know, it's, who knows exactly how much I'm supposed to eat. If I eat any bit more than I'm supposed to, all I have is the aveira without the coverage of the mitzvah. So the Chachamim said, don't do it at all. Again, this is an early example of the Chachamim, the Rabbanan, whoever the Rabbanan were in those days, the Rabbanan telling me not to do a Torah commandment because of a fear that it may come to an aveir. Now, do you know any other examples, even today, where the Chachamim actually told you not to do a Torah law because you might commit a more serious aveira? Yeah?
Isn't it shaking a lulav on Shabbos?
That's correct. We don't take a lulav on Shabbos because maybe we'll carry it, and of course on Rosh Hashanah as well. When Rosh Hashanah falls out, when the first day of Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, we do not blow the shofar because of a rabbinic concern that we might come and carry it where there's no eruv. Yeah?
Same not applies to Yibam as well.
Say again?
Yibam.
Well, Yibam, the Torah.
We're told that, yeah, we're not allowed to do it today because the rabbis said we're not on the.
Yes. But Yibam is not as dramatic, and the reason why Yibam is not as dramatic is because we do the chalitza ceremony, and the Torah itself says chalitza can release from Yibam, as opposed to shofar, where you're literally not doing the mitzvah at all. Yeah.
Just wondering how would eating more than they were supposed to take away the positive commandment?
No, because the positive commandment you fulfill with a kazayas.
With a kazayas.
Right, so when you eat more, you're not doing a mitzvah at that point. It's an optional eating. Anything more than the kazayas is optional. Okay. So it turns out you no longer have the mitzvah pushing aside the aveira. All you have is the aveira.
So if you ate less, if you ate more, you wouldn't have the mitzvah. You'd have to eat that exact amount.
Yeah, I mean, you're allowed to, I mean, normally, if it wouldn't be chadash, like, you know, you're allowed to eat more, you're allowed to eat as much as you want,
right.
As long as it's a kazayas. But when you have an iser, you'd have to be mitzamtzem, exactly a kazayas. So that would be difficult. Yeah?
Why didn't the rabbis make Gezeirgens a bris for, like, carrying a knife for carrying supplies?
In other words, why didn't they? Oh, yeah, yeah. That is a good kasha. The Rishonim asked the kasha. Why don't I make the same gezeira for a bris that I make for a shofar that maybe you'll carry it? So it's a very good kasha. Tosfos asked the question, and one answer that Tosfos gives is that a bris is your private simcha. So if you were to forget, somebody would be there to remind you. When it comes to shofar, the problem is everybody might forget because if they need the shofar to be transported. So we only make these gezeiros when there are mitzvos that everybody has to do, as opposed to a bris, which is only your particular mitzvah. In fact, people even ask a question, which is not answered by this. If, you know, same thing with Purim. If Purim is on Shabbos, we do not read the Megillah on Shabbos, lest it be carried. Well, if you're going to go with that logic, then why read the Torah on Shabbos? You know, I mean, if you're afraid somebody's going to carry a Megillah where there's no Erev, why aren't you afraid somebody's going to carry a Torah? That's a good question. That's not even answered by Tosfos' distinction by Bris Mila. Oh, was there someone had a hand up? Yeah.
The Torah is always kept at shul. There's the shofar, isn't it?
That might be a good teretz practically, but the truth of the matter is you find in the time of Chazal that was not always the case. That shuls used to be located in isolated areas in the middle of the forest, and they used to bring, and just like you do, we do here for this minyan, right? We either would bring it from a safe place, so it really wouldn't always be the way you're describing it. Although today, by and large, it is okay.
I did have a question. So, would they just cut the wheat on the or the barley on the second day?
So this is a big chiddush. The chiddush is because it's keep in mind that it is Chol HaMoed, and although you normally don't harvest, but the Omer would be harvested the night after the first day, which is Chol HaMoed. But I want to make a point that even if that's Shabbos, the mitzvah of harvesting the Omer overrides even Shabbos. So that's an interesting point. That these are aspects that do override Shabbos and the like. Now, Bizman HaZeh, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and we don't have a Korban Omer, but the Gemara in Kedushin has a drasha that when there's no Korban Omer, there's still an Isser of Chadash, but the Isser of Chadash goes off with the passage of the second day. In other words, not the Korban, but Chadash cannot be eaten. In other words, any grain, again, to be very specific, any grain that was planted after the second day of Pesach last year, and it comes to harvest in the course of the year, cannot be eaten until the second day of Pesach is over. Now, the Gemara has a drasha. Bizman HaMikdash, you need the Korban HaOmer. Shelo Bizman HaMikdash, you need the passage of that date. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, this law of Chadash is absolutely a halacha. Now, you don't have to worry about it. First of all, like this, if you think about it, between Pesach and Sukkot is not a danger zone at all, because any grain, any bread, cookies, pasta that reaches market now was obviously planted before Pesach. So for sure, the passage of time or the Omer permitted it. But by the time you get to Sukkot, I'm being approximate, products that reach market in Sukkot may have been planted already after Pesach and harvested in the summer. So the concern for Chadash and Yashan is primarily a Sukkot to Pesach concern. It is not a Pesach to Sukkot concern. However, you don't have to worry about this. And the reason is because any reliable Hashkacha that supervises guarantees, they will tell you that this is only from Yashan, this is not from Chadash, etc. And therefore, it's not something in Eretz Yisrael that a typical consumer has to be worried about. But in Chutz La'aretz, there's a different story. Let me explain the issue. There's a huge, huge machlokas. Does the Isser of Chadash apply to Chutz La'aretz grain? Big machlokas, because the normal rule would be agricultural commandments like Truma and Shemitah only apply in Israel. So one would have thought Chadash is the same thing. But there's an opinion in the Gemara that says that as a drasha, because it says b'chal moshvos seichem, wherever you live, that chadash applies even in chutz laretz. However, the Ramah, among others, paskins, it does not. So here's the thing that you need to know. I don't want to make life more complicated for you. And that is, most mainstream American hashgachos, by that I mean the OU, etc., do not insist that their products be yashan, because they follow the Ramah's view that chadash is not a problem in chutz la'aretz. Now, this time of year, you don't have to worry at all. From Pesach to Sukkot, no matter what's out there, is going to be yashan because it must have been planted before Pesach. But there will be a few months, 6 months, during the year, in which a given grain product, spaghetti, cookies, and the like, might in fact be chadash that cannot be eaten till after Pesach. I'm putting aside chametz problems, assuming it's properly sold. If it's not sold, you have a problem of chametz that was owned. That's a separate issue. So as a result, therefore, now again, many people are meiko. Many people do eat chadash and chutz laretz. They follow the Ramah. But if somebody wants to be machmer on this, and it is a proper thing to be machmer. In fact, I don't think we ought to trade chumras, but if somebody were to ask me, you know, I only want to keep one chumra. Should I keep Chal of Yisrael or should I keep Chadash, the Yisra of Chadash and Yasha? I'm only going to do one. I'm not going to do both. So the truth of the matter is that keeping Yasha might be a more important chumra than even Chal of Yisrael, because Chal of Yisrael at most is a rabbinic decree. At most. The problem, the machlokas of whether there's chadash and chutz laretz, potentially might be a doraisa problem. So it's a pretty important chumrah. So, but once again, so if there are, so it's a complicated thing. If you're an expert in product codes, barcodes and product codes, you can actually tell from a product code when something was harvested. And in Lakewood, they publish guides, very detailed guides, which products are okay, which products are not okay. Some people actually buy all of their cookies and pasta. They buy it now, and then they keep it for the whole year because they know that whatever they buy now for sure is going to be yashan. Okay, it's an issue to be aware of, but the point to know is, though, that a mainstream American hashgacha, even if it's reliable, is not certifying whether something is chadash or yashan. That is separate information that you need to have. In Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to worry about that, simply because, since for sure there's an Isser of Chadash, so a reliable Hashgacha will only allow Yashan products to reach the market. But as I say, this time of year, no problem. This time of year, everything is Yashan, because anything that's out there must have been planted before Pesach. We're so close to, and that'll be true till Sukkot, or maybe Rosh Hashanah, and the like. Okay. Now, this brings us now to the... So we talked about two things. The prohibition of eating chadash, the korban of the omer. Now we move to the counting of the omer. And there's a mitzvah to count the days from the bringing of the omer until the holiday of Shavuos. And this is the mitzvah that is called Sfiras HaOmer. So, there's a bit. What is the purpose of counting Sfiras HaOmer? It is the counting towards the holiday of Shavuos. Yeah.
So, if you don't bring the Omer, you still have to count.
Right. So that I'll get to that in a moment. That's a very, very good question. Well, Lamaisa, you have to count. The question is whether it's Torah or Rabbinic. Yeah, I'll get to that. So the Sefer Achinuch writes that the purpose of counting the Omer is to create a linkage between the holiday of Pesach and the holiday of Shavuos. The holiday of Pesach is freedom. The holiday of Shavuos is Torah. But we need to link the two so that we understand that freedom that is not connected to accepting Hashem's Torah is worthless. The value of freedom is only when it enables you to accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you don't look at Pesach and Shavuos as two separate holidays. But Sviras HaOmer connects the two holidays. In fact, in some sources, the whole period of Sfira is described as a long Chol HaMoed, although it doesn't have the halachas of Chol HaMoed and the like. And Chazal make this point even stronger by pointing out that the korban of grain on the second day of Pesach is barley, and barley was commonly fed to animals. This is before the invention of cholent. And on Shavuos, we bring a wheat offering. Wheat is human consumption. So what is the idea? Freedom without Torah is like a wild animal. It is the Torah that brings you to human dignity. I've mentioned before the beautiful metaphor of Tagore, who's an Indian poet, now obviously not Jewish, and he described a human being as a violin string that is capable of producing beautiful music. But if the string is totally loose, I have a loose string on a table, it can't make any sound at all. It's free. It can't produce anything. Only when it's tied down and it seems to be restricted is it able to express the music within. So too, it is the acceptance of Hashem's Torah that truly liberates the beauty and power of our soul. In fact, I would even add a little homiletical thought. I don't have a source for this, but I think it might be a possibility. You know that the first day of Pesach, the first night of Pesach, is the same day of the week as Tisha B'Av, later on in the summer. So this year, of course, the first day of Pesach was Friday night and Shabbos. Tisha B'Av will be Friday night and Shabbos, but since we don't fast on Shabbos, we're going to fast Motzei Shabbos, but it's always going to be the same date. So here is what I would suggest, why Hashem made it that way. Because the first day of Pesach is the only day that has freedom without Torah, because we don't start counting the Omer until the second day. So the first Seder, or the only Seder, is freedom that is not yet counting to Torah. Maybe the lesson is, when your freedom is unhitched from Torah, that will lead to destruction. In a way, it's kind of a message, all right, you're not counting the Omer. And of course, it is a good kasha. We'll talk about that later, why you don't count the Omer from the first night of Pesach. But we start from the second. Okay. So that's the basic idea, to connect freedom and responsibility. But the halachic question is a very fascinating halachic question, and that is, most Rishonim say that the mitzvah of counting the Omer Bizman Hazeh, when there's no Beis HaMikdash, is only a rabbinic commandment. It is not a Torah commandment. Reason? Because the Torah doesn't say you start counting from the second day of Pesach. The Torah says you start counting from the day that you bring the Omer offering. Since today, we do not bring the Omer offering, because we are not yet Zocha to the Beis HaMikdash, according to Tosfos, the obligation to count the Omer is Midrabanan, and it's in the category of what is called Zecher La Mikdash, to remember what we did when there was a Beis HaMikdash. This is Tosfos and most Rishonim. The dissenting opinion is that of the Rambam. The Rambam actually says that even Bizman Hazeh, the mitzvah of counting the Omer is a Torah requirement, because it is not linked to the bringing of the Omer. Rather, according to the Rambam, the day that you would have brought the Omer, whether you bring it or not, is the day that you're mechuyev to start counting. Now, bottom line is, everybody says you got to count. That's not a machlokes. But Tosfos says it's midrabanan. The Rambam says it is min haTorah. Now, is there a practical difference whether an obligation is rabbinic or Torah? There actually is a very, very significant a practical difference, and this is very, very relevant, not so much in yeshiva, but in regular shuls. You know, let's take typical American shul. Typical American shul davens Maariv after sunset, but before the stars come out. I guess people want to go home. And you are Yotzei Maariv, but you have to say Shema again. Now, here's the thing. Let's say Shkia in New York, make up a time, is 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. So they daven Mincha at 6:45, and they daven Maariv at 7:05. So it's after sunset, but it's not dark yet. The stars aren't out yet. Now, halachically, this period is called Bein Hashmashos. Bein Hashmashos is typically translated as twilight. Twilight is called a suffix. We're not sure halachically, is it day or night? That's why Shabbos, because of that suffix, Shabbos has to begin no later than sunset, because maybe it's night, but you can't end Shabbos till the stars come out, because maybe it's day. Right? In other words, that's exactly why Shabbos starts no later than sunset, and it ends no earlier than the stars coming out, however you define that. Because the Bein Hashmashos, you have to treat as a suffix. So here's the question. Am I allowed to count the Omer with a bracha in the Bein Hashmashos period? Let's say I'm davening in a shul that's doing Maariv early. So Kriya Shema, for sure, I have to say over again. That's not a question. I can daven, but I have to say Shema again. That's not a question. But am I allowed to count the Omer with a bracha? Or do I have to wait until Tseis HaKochavim?
Wait.
Well, this depends. According to Tosfos, that the counting of the Omer is rabbinic. So if you're in doubt, is this the proper time to do a rabbinic commandment? You're allowed to be lenient and give yourself the benefit of the doubt. So you would be allowed to count. That's why the Chazan counts. If, on the other hand, you follow the view of the Rambam, that the counting of the Omer is a Torah requirement, then in cases of doubt you would have to be strict and you cannot count until it is definitively dark. Now, since this is a machlokas, the practical advice we give to people is that it is better for you not to count early, because like the opinion that it's d'oraisa, you're not yotzei and your bracha is in vain. But if you're a chazan or something, you would be allowed to count based on most of the Rishonim that say it's drabanan. Yeah.
Another question on the question of whether or not you can say it during the Bein Hashmashos period.
Yeah.
Because to me it seems like there'd be no reason why you can't just wait until later. Like, what situation would arise where you would have to say the Sefira in that period of time?
No, it is a good point, but you know, it may arise the following. Number one, that's when the minyan is davening. Number two, you might be afraid that you might forget later, meaning to say, if the shul is counting early, you know, you might be concerned, I'd like to count now because, you know, later on I might forget, right? So that might be a consideration.
Is that enough, like, concern I might forget?
I think it's a very real concern. Many people do forget. In fact, you know, the custom that the Chazan, in some places the Chazan counts the Omer, in some places the Rabbi counts, right? So they say the basis of the minhag of the Rabbi counting the Sefira is that we're afraid maybe the Chazan forgot and is no longer able to make a bracha, and the Chazan is going to be real embarrassed. So we make the assumption rabbis don't forget. Now, the interesting question is, what if the Rabbi forgot? What's happened? It happens. So there actually is an answer that the rabbi should have a confidant that he confided. So the rabbi says, listen, I can't make the bracha anymore because I missed the day, but I'll make the bracha to be motzi you, so you have kavana to be yosei with my bracha. But that is a concern, particularly in the beginning, the first 2 weeks. You're not used to it yet. Person might forget. Did you want to say?
Yeah, I seem to remember when I was living in Chicago that we davened before Seis, but we made the bracha at minyan, but that we should count later without a bracha.
Right. So that's a different. Right. So that's kind of a different chashuva. Meaning to say, some people will say, in order to avoid forgetting, we make the bracha and we count in reliance on Tosfos, and then to fulfill the Rambam, we count again, but we can't make a bracha again, because since the Rambam Tosfos, we were Yotze, would be a subject bracha of Batella. Yeah, that's common. Now again, some say it is better to wait totally and make the bracha bisman. Others will say make the bracha, but count later. Yeah.
If you say Mari in that time, Be'ash Manus, on Saturday night, does that mean... Like, and Shabbos is not over for, really anybody. What does that mean?
No, that's a very interesting thing. It may sound counterintuitive. You can be Yotzei not only Ma'ariv before Shabbos is over. You can even be Yotzei Havdalah, although without a candle. Meaning like this. You can make, and you shouldn't do this, but you can make Havdalah before Shabbos, even before sunset. You can make Havdalah after Plaka Mincha, which is an hour and a quarter before sunset. You can make Havdalah late Saturday afternoon and be Yotzei, although, Chas V'Shalom, you're 1,000% not allowed to do Malacha till it's over. So essentially, you can make Havdalah early, and you can daven Ma'ariv early, although it doesn't end Shabbos. It's an interesting idea that
you
Shabbos
say
keeps
that
on.
Part,
right, right. Atachan Antanu. Right. If I daven Ma'ariv after sunset, I say Atachan Antanu, and I can even make Havdalah on wine without a candle.
You have to use a candle after Shabbos.
Yes. After Shabbos, you should light a candle and make Borei Morei Ha'esh. Now we don't do this for obvious reasons. I mean, this is technically permitted. But we don't do it for obvious reasons. One obvious reason is that people psychologically think as soon as you make Havdalah, you can do work. So we're not going to make Havdalah early because people will do work. And number two, which is the same thing really, people connect Havdalah with candles. So if I tell them you can make Havdalah, they're going to light a candle. It's confusing. I remember once I was at somebody's house. It's an understandable mistake. Tisha B'Av, like this year, Tisha B'Av was Saturday night. And this was a firm person, but he was not learned. So what he did was, it sounds funny, but it's not a foolish mistake. It's not a dumb mistake. The first thing he did was, since Shabbos is over, he made Havdalah over a cup of wine. He drank the wine, and then he would begin the fast of Tisha B'Av. The problem is you can't do that because once it's Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to eat or drink. Right. So what do you do? That's something to do with this question. So Lamaita, what you do is very, very strange. When Tisha B'Av is Saturday night, like this year, whether it's the 9th of Av or the 10th of Av, what you do is the only thing you do when Shabbos is over is you say Baruch Hamavdol Ben Kodesh L'Chol, you said it in Shmona Esrei Atachan Antanu. You make a bracha over the candle, nothing else, Borei Morei Ha'esh, nothing else. And after the fast, Sunday night, you take a cup of wine, because it's the 9 day, whatever, in other words, either wine or beer, that's another machlokas, you make a Havdalah, and you say the whole bracha, Baruch Hamav, the Obey Kodesh
Lachal. After Tishkov, it's not the 9 days, it's the Shabbos before.
So technically, it depends like this. The minhag is, that because most of the Beis HaMikdash burnt on the 10th of Av, we don't have meat or wine until Chatzos of the next day. Now, so this would depend. So if Sunday, if Shabbos is the 9th of Av, and you observe the fast on the 10th,
then
you can have wine. But if, on the other hand, Shabbos is the actual 8th of Av, and the fast is Sunday is the 9th of Av, then you still make it on beer. So it depends on that particular issue. Yeah.
I don't know if you said this, but can you do a special
Well, that's what I said. According to Tosfos, you could. According to the Rambam, you can't. So it is best to be strict like the Rambam and defer it until later. That's the best thing. Now, there is a third opinion, which I'll just mention. It's very, very difficult to understand. This is the opinion of one of the great Rishonim, a Talmud of the Rush, Rabbeinu Yerucham, who points out that there are two aspects to counting the Omer. We count the days, and we count the weeks. So he wants to say, counting the days is min haTorah, counting the weeks is midrabanan, zecher lemikdash. And he proves this to various psukim. Again, we don't follow that. We either follow the Rambam or Tosos, but Rabbeinu Yerucham is mechalek between the days and the weeks. But now I want to tell you a very, very fascinating chiddush of the Beis Halevi. Hopefully nobody forgets Sfira here, everybody counts the Omer properly. But, as I say, the biggest danger, by the way, is Pesach itself, because you know we're not used to it yet. So if you miss, you're likely to miss literally in the first week. But everyone should know the halachas. What is the halacha if I forgot to count the Omer? So it depends. If I forgot to count at night, but I remember in the day, right? Last night was the 16th. Right? So if I didn't count last night, and I remember, I didn't count, so I would count Hayom Shisha Asar Yom without a bracha. But as long as I counted, I resume my count the following night with a bracha.
Only if you miss one day, right? Only if you do that one day in a row. Does that not matter? Let's say you did that 2 days
ago. No, it makes a difference. Even if you did it every day, you could always resume. Now, if on the other hand, I missed the whole day, I didn't count 16th, not only last night, but I didn't count, I didn't recognize it till it's already night, and it's the 17th, and then I say, oy vey, I didn't count the 16th. I missed the whole day. So this is a serious issue. Here, you lose your ability to count with a bracha. You still count without a bracha, and you go to the chazan, or you go to somebody and say, be motzi me with a bracha. But you can no longer make the bracha if you missed an entire day. And this is based on the idea that the Torah describes the mitzvah as tamimos, complete. So if you miss a whole day, it's no longer complete. Right? This is a well-known halacha that everybody should be aware of. But I'll tell you an interesting chiddush of the Beis Halevi. Yeah.
So what happens if you say the bracha, and let's say it's whatever day it is, and you say the wrong day?
Yeah.
Do you say the bracha, or do you go and re-say the bracha?
No, you do not re-say the bracha.
No, just, the next night.
Oh, the next night?
Let's say you said the wrong number.
No. If you said the wrong number, you missed it. I mean, saying the wrong number is no better than not doing it at all. But you're asking if I correct myself right then, so then I don't make the bracha again. But I can still make the bracha the next night. I can make the bracha the next night because I did count the right day. If I totally counted the wrong day, it's not going to... Now, let me just mention the Beis Halevi's chiddush. The Beis Halevi wanted to say the following chiddush. If we look at days and weeks as a separate, two separate commandments, the Beis Halevi wants to argue that even if I missed a day, I might still be able to count the weeks as they end. So for example, let's say I skipped day 9. So I could no longer, totally, meaning I didn't even count during the daytime. So I could no longer count day 10, day 11, day 12. But I can still count the end of every week. So I can count day 14 because that's 2 weeks. I can count day 21 because that's 3 weeks.
With a bracha?
With a bracha. In other words, he says, I can't count in the middle because those are just the days, but every week I can count. So his chiddush was, even if you missed a day, so you're not tamimot with respect to the days, you can still be tamimot in respect of the
week. As long as you
week.
Didn't miss 7 or 14 or
that's 15. Correct, that's correct. Now, it's an interesting story. When the Beis Halevi became the Rav of Brisk, he was Rav Chaim's father. So Some people in Brisk were not happy with the Beis Halevi because they were modern, they were progressive, they wanted a more modern rabbi who understood culture. They thought the Beis Halevi was too strict. So they wanted a meeting with him. And they said, you're too Haredi, you're too strict, you're too old-fashioned. You know, you always look at halacha in such a strict way. So the Beis Halevi said, what do you mean? I'm a tremendous makel. I'm very lenient. I'm with the times. So they said, oh yeah, they were kind of happy. Tell us your great leniencies. So he said, well, I have a chiddush that if you missed a day of Sfiras HaOmer, but you didn't miss the week, you can still count with the bracha. Well, they were not really looking for that type of innovation. That really didn't address their concerns. But the Beis Halevi said, you see, I'm very makel, I go with the times as well. Now, I have to say, the Mishnah Brura does not bring this distinction. Now, it's always hard to know what do you infer from a negation? Meaning, do I say, since he didn't bring it, he would disagree, or he just didn't mention it? But as they say, our minhag is not to follow the Beis Halevi. So if you miss a whole day, you don't make the bracha at all, but you try to hear the bracha from someone and ask them specifically to be motzi you in the bracha. Yeah.
What if you only remember during Bein HaShemashos?
Yeah, so that's a very, very good question. Now here, the Bein HaShemashos kicks in the opposite dimension. Right? Before we were talking about, can I count the next day Bein HaShemashos? Now the issue is, can I count the old day Bein HaShemashos? So I would say, again, I don't have time to go into the lumdus, that you can count Bein HaShemashos, the old day, without a bracha, and that will save your brachas for the future.
Even if you count both the old and the new day?
No, you can't do both. Because if you're treating it like day, you cannot on the same night treat it like the next night.
What about the next night, though? Can you, like, day 14 I count?
That would be theoretically possible, yes. Yes, that would be possible. But for the same night, you cannot treat Bein HaShemashos in a dual inconsistent way.
Yeah. But if you're not sure, like let's say it's the seventh night and the first week, and yesterday you know you counted every day, but you're not sure if you said that was the, you know, last night, that was the sixth night.
In other words, you're in doubt whether, you know you counted, but you're in doubt whether you counted the correct day?
Yeah.
Unless you really think you didn't, you can assume that you did the right thing. I mean, there you can make that assumption, yeah.
If you miss the day and the night, do you go out of your way to listen to the bracha?
Yes, absolutely, because since you cannot make the bracha, you need to hear somebody make it for you. Yeah, so you need to hear that, yeah.
Is it
l'chachila
to count Sfira
with the minyan?
This whole idea of forgetting.
There is a basis for it, but the halacha is that it's not
so the idea of going home and counting, you're saying you're
no, that's fine, yeah. That's fine. I mean, the main problem is you might forget, which is a cheshvan, but there's no particular heder to do it with a minyan. Yeah.
You know, in the thing before with Tisha B'Av and Shabbat, where it comes after Shabbat, why did you skip the Pesachim?
Well, on Tisha B'Av, you're supposed to deny yourself pleasure, so you don't use besama. Now, if you're going to faint, you can use besama even on Yom Kippur.
It's also forbidden smelling things.
No, it's not forbidden, but it's not unless you need to do it because you're going to faint. You know, you don't smell the
chumrah. Or would you say it's, huh? Is it a chumrah?
It's a minog, more of a minog. Yeah, yeah.
What do you mean? There's no hitter in doing it with a minyan. But Rabbah Malad is better to do with that.
Well, it is better, but that wouldn't override doing it in the right time. Doing it in the right time is more important. And there's no problem in doing it b'yechidus. Yeah, you're giving up that heder, but again, like anything else, doing the mitzvah bizman is more important than rovam hadras mam. Yeah.
If you held like the Rambam, but your shul is like American shul, does the spirit yeah. early, would you have to leave before they count?
No, you don't have to leave. You just don't do it. In other words, I mean, you know, I've been in 1,000 minyanim. In fact, my own shul did spirit early. You say amen to the bracha, of course. But don't count, that's all. In other words, defer it until later. Or, you know, again, some people say, count with the bracha and count later, but if you're able to remember, I would say it's better not to count. But you can be in the show. You don't have to run away. Yeah.
This could be involved when we talk about the derban and the raisin. So this manena, like the whole idea of Pesach, the second day of Pesach in America, is really, we know exactly when Pesach is.
That's right.
We have all kinds of mathematical calculations.
No, that's correct. That's totally totally Rabbanan, absolutely.
Right,
absolutely.
So why would we keep those today, even though we know exactly when it is,
so,
some scenarios,
yeah,
would be docha at the rising.
Yeah, so the Gemara says that the Chachamim were misakein, that even though today, already in the time of the Gemara they knew, we know when the Chag is, but we should hold on to the minhag that was established, because perhaps there will come a time in which we will go back to the old system, right, of shluchim, etc., and then we'll have uncertainty again. In other words, they just basically said that when we go back to Re'iyah and Shluchim, we're going to have calendrical uncertainty. And therefore, we need to keep this minhag in place.
But it's tough, no, because people wear tefillin kol amar.
Yeah, so this would
so
be in a...
Yeah. They're missing a deraisa for...
Well, everybody, no, for Karek, nobody wears, no, one second. The eighth day of Pesach, deraisa, is not kol amar. The eighth day of Pesach is... Chol. So for whatever your minhag on Chol HaMoed is, on the eighth day of Pesach, not this year, with Shabbos, you're mechuyev to put on tefillin. I'm just strengthening your point. In other words, your point does not depend on what you do during Chol HaMoed.
Uh-huh.
And when the Rabbanan say, oh no, you got to make the eighth day of Pesach a Yom Tov, they are actually
right.
Taking away, nothing to do with Chol HaMoed, they are taking away a mitzvah d'oraisa of tefillin. You are 100% correct. They are exactly doing that. But once again, this is an example of the Chachamim Takana being able to override Doraisos. That does happen. Yeah?
That the Takana doesn't really make sense, because by Rosh Hashanah we don't do what we used to do. It used to be they would have Rosh Hashanah on the 29th, or the 30th and the 1st, but we actually do Rosh Hashanah on the 1st and 2nd nowadays.
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. But we do no. that's a little tricky because we do Rosh Hashanah on the 30th of Elul, because Elul is always 29 days. So technically, the first day of Tishrei does correspond with what would have been the 30th day of Elul. There.
But like other Rosh Chodesh, we only have a 2-day Rosh Chodesh if it's. If the month is actually 30 days.
Yeah, I understand that. So the assumption here is that we know based on the calendar that Elul has 29 days. So the 30th day has to be the first day of Tishrei. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, sometimes Elul had 30 days. So Rosh Hashanah would have been the 31st day. And therefore, 1 and 2... is based on sometimes Elul was 29, most of the time, and sometimes it was 30, but based on the calendar, it's always 29, right? So that's why you have the 2 days, 2 days there. Okay, anyway, you'll be well, and Mr. Shem will be together again in a few weeks, but much, much, hatzlach in this month.